Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together, we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn. Here's your Homeschool Companion host, author, educator, and children's ministry specialist, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome. Thank you so much for spending this time with us. We're reading from this book called Windows on God's World by Dr. James Tucker, and today's devotion is From Whence Come Barnacle Geese. And God said, Let the waters bring forth abundantly the moving creature that hath life, and the fowl that may fly above the earth in the open firmament of heaven. Genesis 1:20. Until 1907, no one knew where barnacle geese came from. Every fall, flocks would appear in northern Europe, stay for the winter, and then fly north to their unknown nesting grounds. But in 1907, barnacle geese were found nesting on the island of Spitsbergen, north of Norway. Later, other breeding grounds were discovered, and the mystery that had existed for centuries was solved. There is a type of barnacle called the goose barnacle that has a neck and a shell designed somewhat like the head of a goose. Inside the shell is a tiny body that resembles the shape of a goose and feet that look like a goose's tail feathers. Believing that the mysterious geese came from these barnacles, scholars of the Middle Ages named them barnacle geese. Other scholars believe that barnacle geese grew on trees, hanging upside down like fruit until they matured. When ripe, it was said that they fell into the water and swam or flew away. As late as the 17th century, writers told of seeing baby barnacle geese huddled together on the keel of a ship. What they described were barnacles. Such beliefs are, of course, far-fetched to us today, but early naturalists, they were quite logical. Church scholars even quoted Genesis 1:20 to support the theory that the birds came from the water. We now know that even though God created living things from the waters and from dust, He gave each creature the ability to reproduce after its kind in unique and beautiful ways. There are no doubt many things we believe today that will appear ridiculous when we get to heaven and learn more about God's creation. Isn't that the truth? I can hardly wait. Let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day. I pray for a family that is just really going through a trial, needing extra resources or not having enough, I should say. And I pray for another family. Their marriage is pretty rocky right now. Just be a healer to them. And Lord, I thank you. I thank you for giving us the opportunity to praise you and talk about you. And I pray for this nation, Lord. And last of all, be with this show that our words will be your words and our mind will be your mind. All this I pray in thy holy name. Amen. Ta-da! Arts and crafts. Well, we've talked about barnacle geese. And it's pretty interesting to think that naturalists actually thought they came from barnacles. So in the arts and crafts section, I put on the board, Windows on God's World. You'll find it at my Pinterest site, mrgamblin2. I've put a template of a freestanding goose. So if you have cardstock and you can print it out, your kids can cut it out and they can color it with the markings of a barnacle goose. And you'll just have some really cool geese, a flock of geese in your house. If you have more than one child, how fun will that be? I tried to get just the barnacle goose, but instead I got a whole collection of duck and goose crafts. So you can pick and choose whatever you want to do. There's even the famous paper plate goose. So have fun learning. Curriculum Corner. So I want to talk a little bit about Not Grass. It's Christian homeschooling curriculum. not grass. It has texts. And we've been talking a little bit about history. That was a question that came in, what you should choose for history. I like the not grass. I mean, I know it's kind of a funny name. It's just all one word, N-O-T-G-R-A-S-S, because the stories are pretty interesting. And if you have non-readers in your family, then you can read this story to them and make it pretty, you know, even more interesting, especially if you did it in conjunction with some taped stories like what I talked about last time from your story hour, where you have some historical figures that stories are built around. It could make it really interesting. I think all history should be story, because his story really represents God's story for this planet. So remember, curriculum is not just a book or video series, but it's the learning path that you make. Questions parents ask. This is such a difficult question. So Alicia's asking, have I ever been or know someone who doesn't have a college degree, has just gone through a divorce, and they still want to homeschool their kids, but they need to do a job? That really is difficult, isn't it? First of all, you need your husband to step up. Your ex-husband needs to step up. You need to get as much child support as you possibly can. You should get enough child support so that you can still live the way you are accustomed to live. And I know our kind hearts don't want to make our exes feel bad, but I will always regret that I did not go after my ex-husband to get him to pay child support, because I thought I was doing the Christian thing and being nice. My children suffered, and they suffered emotionally because they thought their dad didn't care about them. He didn't ever send any money for their care, and I worked. So yeah, I had a great opportunity because I did have a college degree, so I made sure I taught in a school where they could go to that same school. But you don't have that, so my heart goes out to you. There might be, open up a daycare center. I know your children would probably count, depending on their age, would count as part of the lineup. But my oldest daughter was able to do that, and she was very successful at it. And there's other, maybe other skills that you have, like baking. I have some Spanish friends, illegal aliens, but nonetheless, they have been able to make a living by cooking and baking. So God will help you, and I definitely will be praying for you. So this question is from April, and she wants to know if, what Bible her 14-year-old son should use. Well, of course, I love the King James Version, but if you're going to actually study the Bible, I think you should get the Amplified, the American Amplified Version, because it has so many more, it gives you more information about what was being said at the time, what was being done, and it also puts it in today's language. So that is a really good version. And I'm so happy that your 14-year-old wants to study the Bible. That is fantastic. I wish every 14-year-old wanted to study the Bible. Unfortunately, there are so many things of the world that are clamoring for their attention that hardly the Bible is a priority. I'm sad about that. Okay, I have another question here. It says, we live in the East Coast, so we want to know what are some adventures we could do. Well, anytime you take kids and you go out, it's an adventure as far as I'm concerned. I know that I still take my grandchildren on adventures, and it might be to the local creek or the closest creek. It might be going to play racquetball. It might be going bowling. It might be going to visit the museums. They love visiting all the you know, national parks, and around where I live, we have Gettysburg and we have Antietam. They love going there to the military parks, Heritage Museum, even though I always assure them that war is horrible. Don't be sucked into it. It's not glamorous at all. And I think that going to those parks when they, you know, read about the dead and everything, that they understand too. It's not a glamorous thing. War is not glamorous. Let's see if I have a question. One more question here. So this lady, and my heart goes out to her too, she has had 6 consecutive miscarriages, and now she's suffering again, and her HCG levels are quite high. Her HCG levels are 28,000 compared to the range of 6 to 25. That is pretty high. And I know that my co-host, Kathy Jackson, who has since passed away, often had that same dilemma with the HCG levels, just couldn't seem to keep it in place. And it's a real struggle. It's a real struggle. Our hearts go out to you. We'll pray for you as well. Well, we have to go to break, and we are still talking about Street Smart for College Students with Dr. Bozak. So I hope you'll stay with us. We'll be right back.
You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com.
Well, welcome back. I'm talking with Dr. Professor Michael Bozak from Auburn University, and he's written a book called Street Smart Advice to Christian College Students from a Professor's Point of View. And I think one of the things I gleaned from our first half of the discussion was how teachers your high school teachers had a profound impact in your life. Right. Maybe not so much in a particular subject, but that they affirmed you and they empowered you to go on to get these great things. Now, this book, I'm opening the cover right now. It's a neat cover. Some people walking on a street, on a sidewalk here. It kind of depicts the title of the book, Street Smart Advice to Christian College Students from a Professor's Point of View. And the website,
I can give it to you, www.mikebozak.com.
Yes. Yeah. Now, this is from Chapter 4 of your book, and it's Strategies for Academic Success, and you call it the Learning Onion. Or is the Learning Onion different than the strategies?
Learning Onion is basically the layers of learning.
Okay.
One of the things I wanted to show students in this book was, okay, how do you go about learning something? You know, so many students come out of high school, and they just have memorized everything. That's like the lowest level of learning to me. You've got to tear some things apart. You got to dig into the onion. So that's why I call this the Learning Onion. And students, unfortunately, come to college and they don't have very good study skills. I mean, you'd think they would have, since they've been in school all their life, good study skills.
So strategy number one is
developing effective study skills.
Yes.
Yeah. How do you learn something in a college setting, and how do you prepare for tests? How do you, how do you handle test anxiety? One of the things I tell my students, do you know how your professor's grading you? Because if you don't know how your professor's grading you, you're going to be putting your effort where it's minimally effective.
Mm-hmm.
And if your goal is to do well in college to get that GPA up there, well, you better know how he's grading you or she's mm-hmm. grading you, whether by a curve system, by a straight scale system. You know, a lot of us will drop a test, for example. What's the effect on you? How does a curve system really work? One of the things I talk about in that section of the book is time management. To me, college is a time management game. I don't find that students can't handle college, even physics. They can handle it. They're failing in the so-called values area of their lives. You know, what's an entitlement? What's a work ethic? Do you show up for work every day? I think a good piece of advice for students in this Learning Onion area is that if you had a job at McDonald's, what would be expected of you? You'd be expected to show up on time. You'd be expected to learn the skills of how to prepare like a Big Mac, how much ketchup to put on it, how long to cook it. You want to be courteous to your employees, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Why would you do less in college setting when there's a lot more at stake?
Yes. So strategy number two would be time management.
Time management would be number two.
And number three, then, test taking. What advice for test taking?
Figure out how to take a test.
That's right.
Look, your life in college is dominated by tests. You have tests every week. So it behooves a college student to figure out how to take a test.
Yeah, and some people are really good at test taking, and it doesn't really measure what they know, but they have figured out how to take the test.
That's right.
And unfortunately, we're never going to be in a world without tests.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah,
need to learn that.
And I think that's a little bit of a shortcut that students take. See, one of the mistakes they make there with test taking is that they won't study the actual material. They'll study old tests given by a professor.
Yes.
That's just a cheap way of trying to learn. And you can live or die by that. If the professor does give different tests every semester.
Oops.
Yeah, right. I haven't seen those questions before. So, and I give you advice in that section on how to take a multiple choice test, how to take a discussion based test.
Now, is it true with a multiple choice test, if you don't know the answer, put choose letter C? Is that true?
Well, not on my test, at least. I can't speak for all professors, but to me, my students are always asking me, well, I like multiple choice better than discussion. And I'm telling them, well, I could turn any discussion question into a multiple choice question. It don't matter to me. If you know the stuff, you're not doing all these superstitions like circling letter C or don't have three A's in a row or, I mean, if you know your stuff, would you ever resort to superstitions? Of course not. So my point is know them. Do the spade work and learn the material,
So strategy number four, using campus resources.
Yeah, what I find is a lot of students, they just don't educate themselves on the massive amount of resources that colleges nowadays provide to students who are struggling.
Yes.
And it's an ego issue to some extent. It's an ignorance issue to some extent. It's I don't care enough to find out whether there's campus resources. But all of the larger campuses I know, and I think many of the smaller ones too, have office after office after office of reading helps, writing centers, math centers, student-led discussion sessions, group sessions. Auburn University is surrounded now around the so-called dorms. We have dorms that have their own like learning emphases in that section of the campus, learning families. So I would just say to students, and use your number one resource, your professor. It's what you paid us to do.
That's right.
When a student comes up and says, well, who would you suggest for a tutor for your class, Dr. Bozak? And I'm going, what? How about me? We already paid for me. So that section's filled with that sort of stuff.
And strategy number five, navigating the career process.
And what I mean by that is the sooner you find out what you want to do, the easier it is. And college, in part, particularly the first 2 years, is to do that. So I'm not saying I was one of the lucky ones. I knew what I wanted to do really early in life, but I'm in the extreme minority, I've found out. Most people don't know what they want to do with their life, even in their 40s and 50s. Some people are still struggling with that question. So I would say there to navigate that career process, to deliberately think about what you want to do, how you're wired, what God has for you in life, what he wants for his plan for you. Pray about that. Seek the Lord on that. Seek your parents. Do whatever it takes to kind of find out how you're wired. And then make that decision as early as you can.
Now, that kind of ties in with strategy number six, setting and achieving goals.
Yeah, it does. Those two sections or those two strategies are very similar. I think what I'm talking about in the setting and achieving goals, not only long-term goals, but short-term goals. I mean, if you know, whole, mm-hmm. life in college is filled with goal setting,
mm-hmm.
and you have to know where you want to be. If you want to get, let's say, a certain grade in a course, you have a goal. Okay, how do you set about to get that goal? How do you set about to achieve that A in that hard course that you're taking, or whatever it might be? You know, if you're a college athlete, if you're in the arts, you know, what do you have to do to practice the violin to be the very best? You know, so that section is I'm just encouraging students to shoot high, the sky's the limit, and go for it, work for it.
Yes, and you know, setting and achieving goals. If you're in the habit of setting small goals and then achieving those, even if it's just successfully completing and passing one course at a time,
that's right.
It won't take long before you look back and you're almost ready. Mm-hmm. You're almost completed with your degree.
That's right.
And some of us need to take off little, you know, bite off little pieces at a time. Some people can just see the whole picture and not be overwhelmed by it, but some are overwhelmed by it.
Yeah. And so,
in the last strategy you have, strategy number 7, changing bad student habits. And we're almost to the end of our show, but I'd like to hear what you consider some bad habits that need changing.
Well, I've got a whole list in that section here. So let me run them down
okay,
real quick for
yeah.
you. Cutting classes.
Oh, yes.
Students cut classes all the time. That's horrible for your performance. Failing to hand in homework. Some students just don't hand it in anymore. Saying, I just didn't feel like doing it. Well, that's going to bite you. Not asking for help when you're lost. Chapter and verse of excuses. You've heard that
yes.
before. Choosing trade-offs to payoffs. Praying instead of studying. I have a lot of Christian students who will come up and say, well, I'm going to pray for this, but I don't really have the time to study. I'm going, okay, what would God say about that? Worship at the altar of summa cum laude, meaning putting the GPA above everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, changing majors. Changing teachers, work in the system just to maintain that high GPA. And my advice to students on that is probably after your first job, nobody will ever ask you for your GPA. I mean, it's just
That's
a non-starter.
Right.
You know, who cares? They care whether you can solve their problem and do the job, whether you get
mm-hmm.
along, can you work in a team, all those things that you see on lists of what employers are looking for, and I have some of those in Street Smart. None of them say anything about GPA.
You're
but
right.
Yet students, they're worshiping at that altar.
Yes.
So that's a few of them.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Bozak, for spending this time with us. I am sure that there are listeners right now that are taking note and would like to read more in your book. If you'll give us that website one more time.
Yes. Thank you, Rose. It's www.mikebozak.com. And I have pages there, how to order the book, as well as I do go out and give talks at schools nowadays. I'm able to do a few of those a year, and just to visit with parents as well as students. There's a lot of advice in Street Smart for parents.
Yes.
About
yes.
how to position their children.
Yes.
What not to do, what to do, what to expect, what not to expect. First third of that book is almost pretty much
right. You need to start reading this no later than when your student is in the ninth grade, because the ninth grade on, you're preparing that child for a successful college experience.
Yes, I would agree with you there, Rose.
Well, thank you so much. We have one last thing to say, and that is God bless.
You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.